The Housing First Subcommittee meeting has now commenced. It is June 4th at 4 p.m. The meeting is being held in virtually. For those who are participating remotely, we ask that you mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number to unmute to speak, dial *6 on your phone, and that will allow you to use the that you only use the chat function to request to speak. Also, to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio. This meeting is being recorded. To comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by the way of roll call using audio, not by using chat function. So we'll go ahead and do roll call. Tisha Tallman, I'm here. Mindy Bernstein?
Here.
And Mark Clark.
Present.
And Wendy Asher is not present. We'll go ahead and do a call to audience. Do we have any audience members?
No one in the audience, Tisha.
Okay. We'll go ahead and go to agenda item number 2, which is the Housing First update. Austin, if you'd like to.
And before I get started, I wasn't sure. Do y'all prefer like a PowerPoint presentation to follow along? Because I made one, if you want one. Okay. Let me. Okay. I think y'all can see my screen.
Pretty.
All right. And so I will jump in. This information comes straight from our Housing First Director, Brandy Champion, during her last update to... How can I make this go away? Who knows? So for an update on Housing First, Housing and Shelter Services initiatives, and this data is reflected from the quarter of January through March. That is the information that they delivered at the May Mayor and Council meeting. So across Housing and Shelter Services that Housing First is administering in the community, they served 171 folks total. 110 of them were adults, 61 were children. And what you're looking at here is that data broken down based on the city's shelters that they operate. So the Wildcat Shelter served 78 of those 171, 29 of them were children. The trend at Wildcat Shelter for at least the past 9 months has been that the amount of families that they are serving has increased. So that is translated in the number of children you see there. Desert Cove has served 32 folks in that quarter, 26 of them, majority of them were adults with 6 children. And the Amazon shelter that the city is working to rehabilitate for ongoing transitional housing, but is currently being implemented as a shelter, served 61 folks, 35 of them adults, and 26 children. Right, the Housing First team is pretty robust now, and it's over 40 something permanent employees. And so in that division, right, there are 2 major teams that are delivering shelter, supportive services, and wraparound ongoing services, including case management. That's the Housing Emergency Action Response Team. That team is designed to provide additional case management and supportive services to folks that may be housed in permanent housing in an effort to reduce recidivism and support in landlord retention. So in that program, 116 total households have been assisted, and the ways that they were assisted included maintaining their permanent housing, right? So that mitigation between landlords and sometimes mitigation between some of your new community members, receiving case management services for folks that might need a little more than just a one touch or a couple of like mediating support. And then wraparound supportive services, support with document collection, if there's a need to connect to legal resources or child care for folks that may be reuniting with family members, that team supports there. And they also support in the communities Violence Against Women Act, VAWA, Emergency Transfer Plan for folks that are experiencing intimate partner violence, domestic violence, and may need like emergency support. And that is by way of coordination with Emerge to refer and then outline how case management services are maintained through HART, and that rental assistance in a safe unit is provided by Emerge. In their Crowd to Home program, which is funded by the Arizona Department of Housing, they have supported 197 total households. And those that support has looked like emergency financial assistance, in recognition of some programs and their eligibility in order to maintain them. As an example, public housing. If someone were unable to pay a utility service and received a disconnection, that could compromise their continued eligibility and participation in that program. So Crowd to Home mitigates the potential for recidivism by supporting in that way. Housing stabilization services that has looked like supporting folks in their initial placement into their referred housing program, supporting utility arrears, right? So that a person isn't entering their new home, new community with outstanding debts or like worries. So they can focus on their ongoing housing and care plans. And then where the community is working to stabilize folks as they enter their own housing programs with other nonprofit providers, wrapping around to provide additional supportive services in that like warm transfer to the provider that's going to be ongoing in a participant's success. Their mobile shower program, which is getting a lot of buzz, rightfully so, in the period between January and March, served 304 individuals. Really amazing program. They had a period where they needed to kind of pause so that risk management could assess that the ways that the gray water and the transporting of the unit were copacetic. And that they are, so they are back up and running. And this information that you see here is available in the city's annual report that was released. And then Housing First is participating in the Housing Central Command efforts. This community received what was awarded under the Special Notice of Funding Opportunity released by HUD's Continuum of Care program about a little over 2 years ago in the 2024 NOFO. And that special opportunity was particular to unsheltered homelessness or rural homelessness. So our community selected to apply for unsheltered. And there were three projects funded out of that. And one of those projects is administered by the Housing First Division, and that is the Multidisciplinary Outreach Team. And so what you see here underneath that heading are the partners that are making that multidisciplinary outreach team truly multidisciplinary. So the Housing First team provides outreach and housing navigation workers, right? OPCS is a partner. A subrecipient in that effort, and they partner to also deliver housing and housing navigation and outreach services. And then LVO provides medical services that are delivered by a family nurse practitioner and a medical assistant. Those teams are actively conducting outreach in encampments. That includes the nurse practitioner. She is hot footing in encampments with them and bringing services directly to folks that may be disenfranchised or had adverse experiences historically, and so how working to re-engage them, build trust and rapport, and bring them back in to services that are the most appropriate intervention for their housing permanency and overall stabilization. In that effort, there are two permanent housing providers that were awarded. That is Community Bridges Incorporated, as well as OPCS, and a separate agreement that is not the same as this partnership. We also have Primavera Foundation. Thank you very much, Tisha, for providing that approval that is participating independent of being funded in this special NOFO. So those grant agreements were eligible and signed in October. And then we had time to really develop an assessment that would be implemented in encampments, like from a housing first approach, right? How do we make sure that folks that are disparately or disproportionately impacted are directly served? And if they, haven't grown the trust and rapport with the system to come in to those services, how do we go to them? And we began implementing that new assessment by way of the Housing First MDOT team in encampments in January. And then in early, late March, began housing folks. So 156 folks were assessed between in the encampments at Swan and Valencia, Irvington and Mission, and Aviation. And of those 156 assessed folks, 126 of them were referred into housing and supportive services programs by the providers that I just mentioned. Of those 126 referred, right, referral indicates that the assessment is done and that there's availability in those programs. And so those referrals are sent to their respective agency. Once agencies receive those referrals, they connect with the referred participant. After determining that they meet the eligibility for their respective programs, they enroll them. So 88 of those 126 referred folks were eligible and have been in completed their program enrollments. And of those 88 folks enrolled in programs, 52 of them have already been placed in their permanent housing directly from encampment and in fully furnished homes. And that effort is that funding is a over a period of 3 years. So this number should increase. And I will put some links in the chat there on the Strategic Planning Community Engagement Vision. Thanks, Rachel Hutchinson and crew has worked to revise the Housing First dashboard so that it is more easy to navigate and provides a robust explanation of some of the initiatives that, or the initiatives that Housing First is participating in. And they've also created a story map of the Housing Central Command initiative. So I will kind of briefly show before I pop those in the chat, right? And it's now, like I said, a little more clear to navigate, right? You can scroll through, and as you scroll through, it will move you through these different headings that you see up top. And if a person was knowing exactly they wanted to talk about or look at street outreach, you wouldn't need to scroll. You could just click it, and it will jump you to that section. Let's see. Some room here. Similarly, the Housing Central Command Initiative has a story map, right, that has been created that gives background information on C Housing Central Command, where that comes from. It's, from
Hey,
the,
Austin.
yes.
Sorry to interrupt.
No.
I think we can still only see the PowerPoint screen.
Oh, thank you for letting me know.
Oh yeah, no problem. And I can put the links in the chat for you too in
Thank
the
you so
meantime.
much.
No problem.
Thanks for, I was scrolling away. All right, so I go back to the Housing First dashboard because that's really awesome, right?
I can see it now. You're good.
Perfect. So, right, I was mentioning it's like a little easier to navigate. You can scroll through, and as you scroll, and then when you reach those areas, right? Or you could click if you knew I want to just look at what street outreach efforts are, right? And then really learning more about various programs that I gave updated utilization numbers on in the Housing Central Command story map, right, which this initiative is iterative. And so thanks to the Strategic Planning Community Engagement team for creating a story map, because that is able to be iterated as our initiative grows. So this story map gives information on why Tucson was selected, information on the federal approach that's being implemented across the nation with recipients, which is an emergency response disaster management approach similar to when there are large numbers of folks displaced due to natural disasters, right? Recognition that unsheltered homelessness in itself is like a humanitarian crisis. It brings that response to communities. There's information on the multitude of collaborators that are really supporting. While there were three funded grantees out of this initiative, it has really been a catalyst for really robust and meaningful community partnership. And that includes my updates for Housing First, and I'm, open to answering any questions or providing more detail.
Thank you, Austin. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
I do. I don't get local news. I don't read the newspaper. And I understood that there was a large encampment over on Golf Links that people had to move from it. What happened to all those people?
Thank you for that question. So, the encampment off of Golf Links is often referred to as 100 Acres. It sits on Davis-Monthan property, right in the flight path of the Air Force. So, it also, because of that flight path and where it sits at Davis-Monthan, and the activity that happens at the base, that area is tested regularly for PFAS, and so it is time for that testing. And from a perspective of safety, because of that contamination level, and because that is a direct flight path, and if, forbid anything were to happen to a plane in that path, whoever is in that area would be at grave risk. So, the folks in that encampment, while the encampment is large in like geographic space that it takes up, the number of folks there is not over, I want to say total, it's not over 50 total, right? And it was broken into zones based on where testing needed to take place so that really the city could support in being good stewards in the partnership of a land that does not belong to the city or county. So zone one had, I want to say approximately 18 folks in it, right? So the different multidisciplinary outreach efforts are also taken to encampments that the city and county are working to abate and find safe, habitable space for those unsheltered neighbors. So those 18 folks in zone one received assessment, right? And if they, it has to be voluntary services. So with the decision to take services, everyone that wanted them was connected to housing supportive services. Folks that weren't, that are, still in the process of building rapport and that trust were given the option to move into zone two or three, knowing that that folks will, outreach workers will return in about a month and a half to re-engage and see if they're ready yet to come into services. In that duration before they go back to formally work on zone two, outreach workers with TPD escorts are still there almost daily, right? Still working on building that trust and rapport, knowing that folks come into services really as they are ready, emotionally, behavioral health. The nurse practitioner that works with MDOT goes to those locations, right, to assess folks that may be disconnected from physical health care and to get them re-engaged and ensure that, folks living with diabetes and, that may not have access to medication can get that in a timely manner. Right now, the folks that were in zone one, if they were wanting to, have been connected. Folks that were not, there were no arrests at that zone one, and there were no there was no need for like any sort of emergency approach from any of the public safety partners. And my last update on the collaborative effort between environmental services, our public safety partners and housing services was that there was a considerable amount of debris. I want to say 11,000 tons that were removed. So it has decreased like fire concerns as we head into super hot temperatures, and provides a greater view for egress as monsoon season approaches. So I hope that is helpful.
Yes,
All
thank
right.
you.
You're welcome.
Anything else? And of the 160 of 156 who were assessed, completed a housing assessment, like how much is that representative of total contacts? Because I'm sure some contacts didn't result in housing assessments, but just interested.
So for the HCC initiative, the 156 assessments are every single person that was at those encampments. So it really did holistically assess everyone. From that, only 126, were at a point in their own willingness that they wanted to come into services. I do think 126 out of 156 is pretty great. And we recognize that as the community of our unhoused neighbors is able to sort of see the proof in the pudding, we anticipate that folks will go to other encampments when they recognize that it really does come with accountability from the provider and it meets the needs that they are stating. So we're hopeful that we will continue to really grow the ways that folks engage. The first encampment that was decommissioned was the Swan and Valencia encampment. It had about 60 folks in it. And that one was, it was a learning experience for everyone. And of the folks that were housed from that initial encampment, there have only been two evictions. And I think that that speaks like volumes to that effort. And it's Tucson, so the community speaks to each other. Our Irvington and Valencia encampment, because of its rural or county location, it was smaller and was about five or six, and all of those folks have been referred. And between those two encampments, once folks arrived to aviation, 100% of folks that were wanting to participate in voluntary services were referred into programs. So each time we get a little better.
I have a follow-up, another question on to piggyback on that one. So people who are being referred into services, how, I'm curious if there's how many beds are available for them.
So the way that Housing Central Command is operating, right, and why I mentioned that there are particular providers that are participating, it's so that we can have a really accurate number of bed and units based on the programs, right? And then so we call those slots that would be able to fund that rental assistance portion, because without the funds, we could find all the units in the world. So we're using that information to then, Housing Central Command put different lanes of effort to really focus on expertise of the different partners. Housing Community Development is a housing department. So myself and the Community Development Manager, Ben Carpenter, physically went to all of the largest property managers to meet with their different leadership to discuss their willingness to participate and accept housing subsidy, to kind of talk through what would it take to get them there, work through some challenges that they may have had, whether that be with our public housing authority and just confusion around, as example, like verifying income, so that we can really support folks in understanding what is regulatorily required from a federal perspective and what really our community can set standards around and how do we iterate and revise those if they aren't meeting the current community need. So from that effort, we developed a housing unit locator tool so that as we have assessed folks and determined the number that we are about to refer from the encampment, we can use that tool to see where are units that meet eligibility for the programs, right, with an FMR. There's a housing needs assessment that was developed so we could proactively see if and incorporate a participant choice, right? If we're serving Mindy and Mindy doesn't want to be on a certain side of town, how are we proactively gathering that information so that we're only offering participants what they have stated they could be successful in? And at the time of then going out and moving folks directly in, we've already had those pre-conversations to hopefully reduce the amount of those that a person would receive that often like adversely impacts their willingness to engage. So from the providers that are participating right now, CBI is funded to support 78 folks. Old Pueblo Community Services is funded to support 100. And part of my gratitude to Primavera Foundation is 178 isn't necessarily going to solve unsheltered homelessness. So really grateful to have Primavera partnering and utilizing resources that they went and acquired on their own independent of the continuum of care. And the continuum of care board and coordinated entry committee have approved other funded providers that are funded outside of this unsheltered opportunity to participate so that we can increase as we continue to iterate the number of folks that we are able to house directly from encampment. You look like you might have more questions. I'm ready for them. Go ahead.
I am. I do. So if I were living in an encampment and people were telling you, I'm referred, I'm curious more about being referred into services. I'm curious about being immediately placed into housing, some kind of shelter with support services, and the number of available beds for those individuals.
So how, so this, the like providers today that are funded under this initiative, and it is coming from like the federal and like Housing and Urban Development and the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, their initiative to support communities in housing folks directly into their permanent housing. So of the 52 folks that we have housed, they did not go to shelter. They went directly from an encampment into their living space. I personally went and acquired a little over $400,000 in unrestricted funds that would support us in purchasing beds and lamps. There's a whole move-in kit process now. So that folks can not just move into like empty boxes, because that is also re-traumatizing, but into furnished homes that kind of mirror the stabilization that the outcome hopes to achieve. In that is how this initiative is supposed to be implemented. That being said, we really want to meet folks where they are at in our providers, our folks with lived experience, and our outreach workers have continued to really advocate for the community to the federal level. That while that is like our North Star and the approach that we really understand that, is being like unveiled to a nation in our community, we recognize that there are some folks, whether it's safety concerns or they are also just building that trust, that will need shelter placement. And so while our community does not have the most robust shelter availability, this initiative has really surfaced like a need for creating channels for throughput of finding out like folks that are currently in shelters, have they been referred to programs and the programs haven't really moved to house them. And so in this initiative, we like have really been working with the shelters that are either funded through Emergency Solutions Grant, because right, the city and county have more authority to kind of push, and trusted COC partners to identify folks that we can support in connecting to a housing referral to create throughput at the shelter for folks that really do need that first stay to stabilize, or folks that maybe had been fleeing or were just unsafe in their encampment. And in order to give them a space to kind of catch their breath, take a nap, come back in a week, and then find that placement. Because there is, at the current moment, not enough shelter space. We have over 3,000 folks that are unsheltered, and we do not have over 3,000 shelter beds. That being said, Gospel Rescue Mission, the county that acquired that, right, the city acquired formerly Knights Inn off of Craycroft, that is now called Craycroft. They kind of have a family focus. So from that and the Amazon shelter, as we have been identifying folks, all those partners have been more than willing to reserve the number of beds that we may need. And so we so far haven't had a challenge of if someone is in need of that first stop of emergency shelter, being able to provide it. I don't, in transparency and honesty, there are not the most shelter beds in the world. So I'm really trying to, currently we're evaluating how to grow the relationship with Gospel Rescue Mission, who is not funded, out of the continuum of care. So they're not required, really to participate, though they do, but really trying to get, just more clarity on their full capacity, so that we can access it more meaningfully.
Behind my questions is an interest that I have and have been surprised at how vocal I've been about it, that we have been looking at sanctioned campgrounds and what do they look like. And I have talked with every person that I meet that is unhoused about the thought or the option of, rather than an encampment, would they consider and it would be temporary until permanent housing or a permanent building was available, but in the gap time where there's nothing versus a campground. Has that been anything that you have talked to people about, or would that be something that you would consider bringing forward to people in encampments to get some feedback directly from them?
So as far as like receiving feedback directly from folks who have lived and living experience, that's something that is like a priority of the continuum of care. And
Yes.
they do that all year round. So I would encourage if that is a priority that you would like to see the continuum kind of work through to attend one of those meetings at the collaborative at the COC lead entity. I don't have any authority over the decisions of the continuum. It belongs to the community, but they have the same call to the public, and folks are able to request agenda time. And I don't see a reason that the commission could not ask for agenda time if they wanted to discuss with the COC board how to advance that. Past that, my feedback on from a city perspective, right, those that decision would come from the mayor and council. And so knowing, right, that the commission is designed to really provide recommendations, and that would have to come out of the commission. From a safety perspective and what is currently being observed in our encampments and in transparency, right? We are our community as well as the nation is experiencing a pretty serious epidemic, pandemic related to fentanyl and substance. And so the challenge between really there is a challenge in identifying in an encampment who there are unhoused neighbors that are needing service, wraparound, right, case management, housing support, and who there may be, contributing to harm or violence of those unsheltered neighbors. And it's challenging to delineate that. And so, in thinking of as you continue to think around sanctioned encampments, I would encourage you to think like, how would that component really be evaluated so that our unsheltered neighbors are receiving what they need, but they are not experiencing victimization or harm by folks that are not unsheltered neighbors. And then my only other update, right, that is not the need for additional capacity in recognition of that a shelter space is not at this current moment like adequate enough is part of that conversation between the city and county. And they did jointly apply for funding in hopes of expanding an unused space that is owned by the county. They have not yet received no one that applied to that funding has received information on it yet. And even though that has not been received, the conversation on what resources may already be available to start to implement sections of that space to kind of just try to iterate before that information has been received are ongoing. So, right, while I'm not the decision maker in that space, just for the Housing First subcommittee, that the understanding at both the city and county that there is a need to create an interim response is a priority at both the city and county is part of ongoing current conversations. With currently, I believe the goal is to have arrived to some initial understanding of how they can utilize that space to begin trying to iterate in July.
Thank you, Austin. Mark, did you have anything?
I don't know that this is appropriate, but I got communications forwarded to me that Brandy had forwarded to us that she had gotten from a shelter provider in the community about two women in their mid-60s. I'm not who were apparently timing out of their shelter at their time. They were timing out at that particular shelter. And I'm not entirely sure why they got sent to us. The information got sent to us other than, I guess, we care about old folks. Both very, it certainly appeared, I think both SSD, well, both recipients had had income apparently less than $600 a month. And I don't, she like mentions things like VI spit at scores, which I have no idea what those mean. But so I'm assuming Brandy didn't really think we'd like generated a shelter somewhere lately.
Thank you for sharing that. While I'm not fully sure, and I'd have to double check, my perception is that she probably assumed that she could refer older adults over to PCOA in hopes that there was a program that y'all may have. What this makes me think from the continuum of care manager perspective, it was like 4 years ago that we had a really great, robust training to really discuss the services that are provided. And it seems like it might be a great time to update the community and redo that training so that folks are really aware of the different providers and what they offer and what they do not, so that they are not.
Well, I believe my colleague was going to try to loop her into a, what does she refer to it as, a community collaboration meeting, which is, I think, today. That was that it, where we get together. Initially, it was just between us and Adult Protective Services, but I think we've been bringing additional partners into it. It doesn't appear that Brandy was actually able to attend the meeting, so. I'm sure Ray will follow up to see if maybe we can make that happen going forward at a different time.
Well, thank you, Austin. I want to move to the next agenda item, which without if you all are in agreement, we will table it until a future time when we can get Rachel back to be on the agenda.
Okay with that.
Okay. And then the fourth one, it says report on additional research on tiny homes. So I think that was just report on additional research, not particularly tiny homes. Would you all, because it's not the correct agenda item, is this something you want to discuss, or do we want to, the next meeting, make sure that it's just regarding additional research that we've already been conducting? Any thoughts?
I'm fine delaying it.
I think getting the housing for the homing project folks involved, and Rachel to talk to us about Phoenix. I did, I researched Austin, Denver, Phoenix, Montana, for the shelter, for the sanctioned campgrounds. And I think all of you know that I am feeling strongly about getting sanctioned campgrounds up quickly as an interim. And again, a year ago, I would not have even imagine myself saying, yeah, let's get campgrounds. But I'm seeing how slow the development of physical apart, residential buildings is a very, very slow process. And I'm feeling strongly that we need to do better than that for our unhoused citizens, that a tent with a bed and a chest of drawers and food and showers and garbage cans and support and wraparound is far more, provides more than an encampment or sleeping, women sleeping alone in the park. I'll stop.
Thank you, Mindy. And procedurally, so that Austin will has a better sense of the context, what the subcommittee has been doing is just doing independent research on our own, and then with an eye towards whether or not we will make a recommendation to the full commission, and then the full commission will determine whether or not to make a recommendation to council and mayor. So that's kind of where we are now. We'll move on then to the next point, which is just next steps. We do have our next meeting for June 25th. Neto, I believe that it's going to be a call to audience, Housing First update. We'll try to get Rachel back. And then the fourth item would be an invitation to someone from the Homing Project. Austin or Mindy, would you like to make the Austin? Can you make that invitation? Thank you. And then we'll just, the other agenda item will be an update on any additional research.
Keisha, could you repeat again the items for next meeting? Housing First.
One is called the audience.
Right.
Two is Housing First update.
Right.
Three is Rachel Milne, and we'll just Austin, maybe I'll reach or try to get her at the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Four is Homing Project.
Okay.
IT. And the fifth is update on additional research, not on tiny homes, just on additional research.
Okay.
And the next steps.
Okay. Can I jump in here for a moment and say that there was a slight mix-up in the agendas for this meeting, and in today's agenda, there should have been discussion on last month's meeting on the question of language that Ray Winch suggested for the goals, and
right.
if you recall that language, the other two committees have discussed. So just be prepared at Thursday's meeting to participate in the discussion of Ray Winch's suggested language change to the goals, which says specify the harm the city of Tucson has inflicted and advocate for efforts to repair harm. So we can't discuss it at this meeting, but Thursday's virtual meeting of the commission, hopefully you will all be in attendance. This will come up on the agenda.
Correct. Do you happen to have that link, Neto? The latest document, it was just the mission statement from the facilitators.
I will I'll have to resend it. I'll have to resend it to you when we get off, if you don't mind.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
And then, Austin, I guess one more housekeeping matters. If you could put the PowerPoint, give that to Neto and make sure that that's up on the website.
Right. Thank you.
Well,
thank you. And the other next step would just be virtual commission meeting is on June 6th. That's this Thursday at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. And with that, there are no other matters for the agenda. Thank you, everyone. And we are adjourned.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.